9. His body is a battlefield. Before all the shore-induced drama by a month or so.
Oh, no, you don't, Emma says, and grabs his arm. I claimed you for tonight months ago. You aren't getting out of this.
Charles looks at her with wide eyes, and then back to his desk phone, ringing away, because he knows it's the killer. He doesn't know how, but there's not a doubt in his mind that it'd be his serial killer on the other end if Emma would let go and let him get the phone.
What if it's a tip? What if there's been another murder?
What if it's your sweet little boyfriend? Emma says, voice mockingly simpering, her lower lip jutting out in a pout so exaggerated that Charles is glad she's indoors. Otherwise a pigeon might try to land on it, or do worse.
Fine. You sit right there. I'll make your excuses.
You what? Charles asks, fully aware that his voice has gone high and shrill because this is a disaster. He has literally had nightmares about what will happen if Emma and Eric are in the same room. It's usually an explosion of blood. That, or Charles being left sad and alone as Eric and Emma flounce off through a field of knives and violence after finding their soulmate. And right now, he's thinking it'll be more like the explosion of blood, because she is reaching for the phone.
Emma! No, wait, we can just go... Hello, this is Detective Emma Frost. Is this Charles's special friend? She asks.
Charles gapes at her. Emma just winks.
Did you miss the detective part of the name, sweetie? Speaking of, what's your name? Well, it's nice to finally sort of meet you, Eric. You seem to be very good at fucking my partner.
Emma! Charles snaps.
She sighs and says, Hold on.
Before turning to Charles and glaring.
What? We need to get going anyway, and if you get dumped over this, he obviously doesn't deserve you, does he?
That's all Charles gets before she turns her attention back to the phone.
Sorry about that, sugar. And I've had plans for tonight with Charles for months, so don't you dare try to jump in. Mine. Understood? Hello?
Charles finishes yanking the phone cord out of the wall and glares at her.
Emma, I know you have some difficulties with social niceties, but that wasn't acceptable.
She rolls her eyes and plugs the phone back in. The killer is long gone, of course, but it doesn't stop her from listening to the dial tone for a moment.
I don't have difficulties with social niceties, I just don't care to use them, Emma says, and sighs,
grabbing him by the elbow and tugging him through the still crowded office. Moira gives them an amused smile, and Charles manages to call up a feeble smile and hello for her as Emma marches him towards the elevators.
I hate that you're taller than me in those heels, Charles says. That's why you should try them sometime, Emma says. I have a skirt you'd look amazing in, but your feet are too big to share shoes.
One of the other occupants, who is clearly not a regular, chokes on his coffee.
I think I'll pass for now, but thank you, Charles says. Are you going to pout for the rest of the night? Emma asks. Because it's not going to save you. If I have to go to this stupid party, so do you.
Charles takes a deep breath.
Emma, it's supposed to be an honour to be invited to the mayor's birthday party. I was done with fancy parties when I was 15, Emma says.
And when the elevator's doors open, she links arms with him. And Charles is too polite to shrug her off and run.
I imagine you were done with them even before that. But now we're pros, aren't we? I want a professional with me at this thing, not some neophyte who thinks caviar and champagne are exciting new frontiers.
He has to admit, she has a point. Charles once made the mistake of taking a girl from his college to a party, and spent the entire time introducing her, subtly answering the people who were subtly asking whether they were secretly engaged, or even more secretly married, that they weren't and didn't intend to be, and watching her blush and displeasure darken as the night went on with nothing but seemingly flowery conversation floating around her. With another experienced society member at one side, it might actually be fun. Maybe.
"I think I'll have your secret love child. Won't that be fun?"
Emma asks.
"Or maybe we'll be secret incestuous siblings. Or we could be running a high-class jewellery theft operation."
"Or we could just be two ridiculously rich and bizarre detectives," Charles says.
"Oh, there's no fun in being who we really are at this sort of thing," Emma says. "Or maybe I'm having Shaw's secret love child and you're the jealous other woman."
"Your other woman or his other woman?" Charles asks. Emma laughs.
"Charles, please. Mine, obviously. It has to revolve around the woman when it's the secret love child of dubious parentage."
"So I take this to mean you had a large lunch?" Charles says. Emma smirks.
"Ah, you know me so well."
Charles should know better than to let Emma pick his clothing, because while it always looks good, it also always comes with a ridiculous-looking tie. Emma finds them hilarious, claims that everyone else finds them very attractive, and she gets to watch him fight the urge to undo the thing the entire night. Still, he knows the rest of the ensemble will be impeccable, and that he doesn't have to worry about somehow clashing with whatever Emma is wearing, so he can cope with the neckwear. She gave him a choice today, at least, but seeing as it was a choice between cartoon penguins and a horrible white and green paisley, it wasn't much of one.
"Did I ever tell you I own a third of this hotel?" Emma asks, as their limo, white, of course, pulls up. "I did part of the interior decorating, too. You'll see a lot of red pillows with little dagger patterns on them. Those are mine."
"I would never have thought otherwise," Charles says, and she smiles at him. "You look spectacular, by the way. I like the pink tones."
"Thank you, Charles. It's called Oyster," Emma says,
nose wrinkling a bit at the name, but still pleased by the compliment. It's practice, really. Charles wonders if Emma is going to slide around like a stiletto blade or bash through conversations like a sharpened battering ram. Either way, it'll be a pleasure to watch. Emma makes him look like a slow child when it comes to the subtle art of insulting people so nicely they think it's a compliment. Charles is a better liar. Or actor, he supposes. It's all a matter of perspective when it comes to these things. But Emma is a better social tactician. The hotel Emma owns one third of is called the Terrace Hotel and sits right on the water. Its namesake dropping in with nothing but a potentially hazardous railing between their deck and water that could easily drown a drunk man. It's a beautiful modern building. Everything that Charles's manor or old apartment building isn't, and he can see the frost influence in the sleek lines of the building that greets them. The ceilings are high, and the decor has a distinctly cutthroat fashion sense. But it being partially Emma's hotel means it's not interesting. She already knows what's in it, after all. And it being Emma's choice of clothing means she can't mock him. And it doesn't take more than 6 conversations, all of which have shown them the parties full of newcomers and less skilled players, before she says,
"I hope someone gets murdered soon. It's about time for your serial killer to make his next move, isn't it? Maybe he'll take pity on us and give us something exciting to do."
"Maybe I should go to bed early," Charles says, because it's a hotel. Emma made a point of getting him a room for free. Whether it'll be the best or worst room in the hotel has yet to be determined.
"Don't you dare, Xavier," Emma says, tightening her grip on his arm enough that he winces. "I'll end up shooting someone if this becomes any duller."
Charles decides not to ask where her gun is.
For the record, the real party is tomorrow, a man says, and Charles turns to see Mayor Shaw behind them.
You're both invited, of course. I'll have invitations sent to your office. Emma, you look absolutely exquisite.
You flatter me, Emma says, smiling, arm linked tightly around Charles. Happy birthday, Sebastian.
I hope it's been a good one, Charles says.
Thank you. It's been adequate. I think it'll turn out better now that you're both here, he says, eyes still trained on Emma.
Could I speak privately with you both? I know it's bad form to talk business at a party, but this may be urgent.
I know just the place, Emma says, and leads them down to the hazardous deck.
Charles grabs a glass of something alcoholic and brown on the way. He's past caring what exactly he's drinking, so long as it makes this easier. He doesn't like dealing with Mayor Shaw, and dealing with Mayor Shaw while Emma is around is even worse. He doesn't know if they're flirting or want to tear each other's throats out half the time, and the other half, it's like they're complete strangers.
About the most recent victim, Shaw says. Mr. Talbot, I had one of my lawyers look into things, and for once I think our killer might have actually killed someone who really was a criminal.
Charles frowns. How deep did you have to dig to find that?
Very, Shaw says. You think the killer didn't know?
I find it extremely unlikely, Charles says. He's been wrong about every other victim, so why would he get it right now? The man's delusional and killing people he's made himself believe are worth killing, not attempting to find one bad man in a random sample of murder victims.
Emma is looking at him strangely. Charles ignores her. So does Shaw, thankfully. He's done an excellent job covering it up, he says. Maybe you're right. Still, I'm going to look into the others.
Be sure to keep us informed, Charles says.
Of course, Shaw says, and turns all his attention back to Emma. Would you like to dance?
Emma looks at Charles for a long moment, before answering with a nod and offering her arm, slipping away from Charles.
Naturally, this is when a man in a wetsuit lifts himself out of the water in one graceful motion until his torso is level with the railing, glances up to meet Charles's eye for a baffling, gaping microsecond, during which the man loses his grip and falls back in with a muted noise of surprise and a large splash.
What was that? Shaw asks, turning around.
I have no idea, Charles says, staring at the railing.
Huh, Shaw says, joining him in the staring for a moment, before shrugging and turning back to Emma, heading for the dance floor. Charles, meanwhile, takes a deep drink of what he's fairly certain is a bourbon and loosens his ridiculous tie, and then cautiously approaches the railing.
Hello?
On the other side of the railing, there's a man in the water who looks a little like he's just had his entire world view shaken. He is also staring at Charles like he's the one who did it. He's also wet and ridiculously attractive. But Charles ignores that to the best of his ability in favour of raising his eyebrows and saying,
I'm assuming you're lost because otherwise I need to investigate why exactly you're trespassing.
The man just keeps on staring. Charles frowns, leaning forward on the railing.
Are you all right? Do you need help?
Maybe he dove in and hit his head.
Here, he says, putting his glass on the railing and offering a hand. We'll get you dried off and...
No,
the man says, sounding more than a little breathless.
Charles takes a deep breath, trying to keep himself from snapping at the man. It's as if he's dealing with a skittish toddler. It makes Charles even more certain the man's concussed.
I'm not going to hurt you, you know. I doubt you would get more than a fine if you're charged for trespassing, and a lost diver isn't exactly nefarious. The man looks oddly guilty.
It's time to get out of the water, Charles states. Either you're coming out or I'm coming in after you.
But your suit, the man says. And that voice, Charles would know anywhere. Charles isn't one for excessive swearing or crude language, but the fact the man in front of him, the wetsuit-clad, absurdly attractive man with blue-green eyes and ginger-brown hair, who is staring at Charles like he's an executioner, is his serial killer, sends his mind into a spiral of stunned lust, and he finds himself breathing out, "Oh, fuck." Eric's entire body freezes up, and he's floating there like a very pretty, very deadly human log. But Charles is having none of that, grabbing him by the thick fabric on his shoulder. "You are getting out of that water and up here with me, now," Charles says, and really hopes he doesn't sound as strained as he feels.
"But," Eric says, "either I'm coming in or you're coming out," Charles repeats, and starts tugging him upwards. It's not doing any good, of course. Eric probably has 15% more body mass than Charles, which he'd already known, but seeing it is quite something. But it certainly gets his point across. Eric bats his hand away, and before Charles can smack him or grab his wetsuit again, he hoists himself out with an easy show of strength and grace. Charles wonders what that would have looked like in a sleeveless wetsuit, and then realizes with sleeves was bad enough. He clears his throat and tries to take deep, calming breaths as Eric swings himself over the banister. It doesn't do much, because his serial killer, who happens to be amazingly attractive, is now standing in front of him, dripping wet, in a skin-tight wetsuit. Charles is just proud of himself for not doing anything... "Oh, screw this," Charles says, and grabs him by the zipper that runs all the way down his front, dear holy God, and kisses him. Eric makes a brief surprised noise, but it's quickly replaced with a moan and wet hands sliding onto Charles's undoubtedly absurdly expensive suit jacket, but he doesn't care. Not when he can see Eric, and touch Eric, and know him. But, Charles realizes in a moment that makes him freeze up, he can't know Eric. People might see. People might ask. Eventually people might put the pieces together. He needs to not know who Eric is. "You shouldn't talk," Charles breathes out, and knows he probably looks ridiculous, half wet and panting and still staring helplessly at his serial killer. He swallows and watches Eric's frown change from confused to disappointed. "Then I might not know who you are. I could just say you're a ludicrously handsome man in a wetsuit."
"Charles, I think if anyone makes the connection this far, there's no stopping it from going the rest of the way," he says, and kisses the side of Charles's face. "It's too late for that, don't you think?"
"But," Charles says.
"No," he states, and pulls away to glare in a way that is probably supposed to be intimidating. Mostly at this point, it makes Charles think he has very pretty eyes. "Charles, if you tell me to shut up, I am going back over that railing, plausible deniability or not."
"Okay then," Charles says,
because that is not happening at all. He takes a deep breath.
"But you should know, if I don't have sex with you in the very near future, I might scream in frustration."
Eric stares at him, and is painfully good-looking. "Oh, I am not as patient as you are," Charles says, and grabs him by one damp forearm and drags him into the building, sneaking them around the ballroom and into the elevator bank with relative ease. The elderly couple and bellboy who get out of the elevator stare at them, but Charles doesn't care. He just drags Eric in after him and is kissing him before the doors are even fully closed. He feels like he should say hello, or explain that he does in fact care about him as a person or something, but that would take away opportunities to have his mouth on Eric. Thankfully, they seem to be on the same page, because Charles has to maneuver them out of the elevator and start moving them down the hall with awkward wall-crashing steps. Charles is very grateful that he has a goal in mind other than away from people, because when Eric's hand finally finds its way to skin beneath Charles's shirt, he really would just settle for the nearest dark wall. He really, really would. It takes a good 5 tries to get the hotel room unlocked, because that means he needs to touch something that is not wetsuit or hair or skin, and needs to look at something other than his very pretty serial killer. Charles gives up on unlocking the door by feel after attempt number 5, because Eric makes a growling noise deep in his throat, and good God, he needs their clothing off, and for that, he needs the door open. It is infinitely difficult to tilt his head away to look down at the lock, but he does. And when the door swings open, they stumble through with not another thought given to the door other than shutting it. His suit jacket was already mostly off, so it's the first thing to go, right along with the tie and any chance of this somehow being dignified since they both end up tripping over the fabric, and probably ripping it in the process. Thankfully, the room Emma decided would be perfect for him happens to be absolutely tiny, and instead of landing on the floor, they've landed on the double-sized bed. Eric wheezes, because while Charles mostly landed on Eric landed on the bed and an ornamental pillow that was probably pyramid-shaped before he squished it. He pulls it out and stares at the very pointy-looking cushion. "What kind of hotel is this?" "Emma's," Charles says, and reaches for the zipper that has been tantalizing him since Eric first popped over the railing. He barely gets it down 1/2 inch before Eric stops him, hand clenched hard and white-knuckled around Charles's. Eric says, and swallows, looking oddly awkward. "It's not pretty, Charles." Charles frowns, and after a moment loosens his grip on the zipper. Eric's hand is still tight around his own, but Charles is an old pro at turning a restricting grip into comfortably tangled fingers, and Eric long ago stopped fighting the transition. "Do you want me blindfolded? We still have my tie. I could go fetch it off the floor." Eric makes a noise that is almost a laugh, but mostly looks confused. "What? No, I don't care? No promise to..." "I'm going to care," Charles states, because he can see how this is going to go. It's that first Tuesday all over again. "You cared when you saw my scars, and I won't pretend to be any different." Eric hesitates. "You'd put a blindfold on." Charles smiles. "It's not like it'd be a new experience," he says, and moves to look for it, only to find himself trapped by Eric's arms dragging him in for another kiss, like Eric is trying to devour him, trying to keep him here forever. Eric pulls Charles out of his shirt between kisses, leaving Charles breathless with wanting as his fingers dart in and out of his clothing as he unbuttons Charles's very expensive pants, belt long ago discarded. He shimmies off the pants and doesn't care that they're probably going to be wrinkled to death, underwear quickly following. He considers moving to take off his socks, but Eric grabs him by the back of the neck and says, "Don't you dare." So he settles for trying to hook his toes in the tops of them while Eric drags him down again. He still kisses like a desperate man, like Charles is going to vanish at any moment, so Charles pulls back. It almost physically hurts to not be kissing him when he's looking into Eric's half-lidded eyes, can see the hot flush on his cheeks, see the way his thin lips are swelling just for Charles. He swallows, and lets his hand find its way back to the zipper. "The tie is always an option," he says. Eric still looks like he'd rather run, but nods. and Charles kisses him again, tries to put every bit of tenderness he can in the way their lips and tongues meet as he moves the zipper down, slowly, 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 because Eric can always get out of this. He lets his other hand slip down to follow the zipper, to feel the skin beneath the rubber, and Eric actually whimpers into his mouth when his fingers slide down his chest. Charles knows it's a risk, but he can't help himself. He pulls away from Eric's lips and moves to kiss his jaw, to kiss the side of his neck, mouth trailing hot and wanting down his body. When the zipper reaches Eric's waist, it's easy enough to move him off the bed enough to slip the rubber off his shoulders, slide it down to free his arms. He's grown to associate the feel of rubber and latex to Eric's body, to know that the subtle pinch and drag of gloves on his body means it's Eric he's there with, that it's Eric against him and around him and filling him and breaking him apart. Charles finally looks down at his killer's skin, straddling his thighs and shifting upwards to get a better view, and lets out a contented sigh, fully aware he's smiling like a mindless fool. "What?" Eric asks, tense and harsh and obviously on the defensive, and Charles can't help but smile at him, tangling a hand in his killer's hair. "If this is funny to you..."
"You look like yourself, is all," Charles says, even though he knows it doesn't make much sense.
It certainly throws Eric, leaves him with his lips slightly parted as he tries to puzzle out Charles's words. Charles looks back at Eric's torso, at the battlefield etched on his skin, and lets his fingers trace the largest scar, one that looks like a stitched-together gutted animal probably would. It's wide and jagged and rough, unlike the others, that are all precise, perfect raised white lines crisscrossing his chest.
"Would you tell me about them, if I asked?"
Eric swallows, eyes wide, jaw clenched tightly. "I tell you."
Charles nods and shifts back to continue downwards with the zipper, smiling.
"I'm glad," he says, feeling oddly giddy, like he's had too much to drink and the world is spinning. But Eric is crystal clear, and his surprised eyes are watching Charles as he approaches the end of the zipper. He sighs against Eric's hip, well aware he's being an insufferable tease, as he stops to bite very, very lightly at the curve of his hip.
"Are you going to?" Eric asks,
voice low and rough, obviously trying very hard to sound restrained, and also very obviously trying not to demand Charles finally move down those last few inches.
"Am I going to what?" Charles asks, looking up at Eric before turning back to the scarless patch of skin he's growing to be quite fond of.
"Ask about the scars," Eric says.
And for some reason, now is when he realizes that Eric has had his hands fisted in the comforter since he touched the zipper. He's having to physically restrain himself. And Charles doesn't know what Eric thinks he needs to keep himself from doing, but he knows he appreciates the thought.
"Of course not, Eric. We're in bed," Charles says, and gives in.
Pulls the zipper down until there's nothing left to pull, and lifts Eric's hips, pulling that ridiculous wetsuit off of him. Eric gasps when the suit slides off his erection, slick and hot. And Charles makes a point of getting the thing all the way off, pulling it down his thighs, his calves, and tossing it onto the floor. He takes his socks off while he's at it, because if he doesn't distract himself, this is going to be over far more quickly than he'd like. The thing about Eric's body is that it's both the most perfect and most battered thing he's ever seen. Like a sculpted masterpiece that some heartless bastard had decided to try and cut into a different form. He can understand why Eric is so nervous, considering the amount of scarring and how telling it is of what kind of life he's led. But Charles can't help it. He stands at the foot of the bed, looking at Eric's body, and shakes his head. God, you're beautiful. Eric stares at him like he's going insane, like he said the most absurd sentence on the planet.
I'm beautiful?
Yes, Charles says, feeling mildly hysterical, because this is Eric's body, and pulls a surprisingly pliant Eric forward on the bed by the thighs, almost literally falling to his knees in his haste. You're amazing. Charles, Eric says, like Charles is threatening to slowly destroy him, but stops talking the moment Charles's hand wraps around the base of his cock. He shudders instead, a one-man earthquake as he rocks himself up into a sitting position, staring at Charles. This they've never done. Mostly because Charles refuses to try and suck someone's cock when he has no line of sight or depth perception to work with. That and Eric has never seemed particularly interested in asking for it. He watches Eric, waiting for a decision Charles didn't even know Eric had to make. He swallows, feeling like he's unintentionally about to step over some invisible line in the killer's mind, and offers... blindfold? It takes another minute for Eric to make up his mind, but when he does, it's obvious. His entire stance changes, all hesitation evaporating, and it is quite possibly the sexiest thing Charles has ever seen, watching confidence pour into his skin, leaving Charles breathless as he curls a sharp, possessive hand into Charles's hair and says, "Don't you dare look away from me."